Welcome to NHL Draft Class. My name is Adam Kimmelman here, as always, with my colleague Mike Morial. Mike, how are you?
Very good, Adam. It was a pretty busy, industrious week at NHL.com, of course, NHL trade deadline. But we have some great guests coming up from the National Team Development Program, no doubt. We'll get into that, Adam. But look, I just need to get something off my chest after recently concluded trade deadline. You know, I've heard all the pundits, you know, how could you trade a high pick in the draft? We talk all the time about how drafting is so difficult because it's so hard to predict how effective any player will be in the best league in the world. You know, you watch them live, you speak with them, you form an opinion, and you arrange a draft board based on your evaluation and the assessment of other colleagues and men and women who are experts in the field. With the exception of a handful that you can tell will be flat out stars and should go relatively high, I think the uncertainty surrounding this draft is very tangible. I mean, let's not act like this season has been just like any other leading into the draft. You know, I was really curious how GMs were going to handle their draft pick assets. And what we learned was that at the deadline on April 12th, there were six 2021 choices exchanging hands and nine 2022 draft choices moved. So I wonder out loud if the uncertainty of what you might be getting in the 21 draft due to the unusual circumstances played in the minds of the general managers and maybe even some scouts.
Well, you're right. You know, you don't know what you can't see, right? And we had Brandt Clark on earlier in the season. So let's use him as an example, the Barry Colts defenseman. You know, you had to rely on tape from seeing him in Slovakia for however many games he played there, 25 games. Is that a true reflection of what kind of player he's going to be? Some of those kids from the Ontario League either haven't played at all or they've had to go search in Europe for jobs against questionable levels of competition. So you wonder, you know, can you get a true evaluation on those guys? The Quebec League kids have played 25, 30 games. Do you have a true evaluation on them? Same with the Western League kids. So yeah, there's some real question marks surrounding this draft, just the knowledge base on some of these players. However, that doesn't change the fact that there are a number of talented players available in this draft, and we've seen them, we've talked about them, we've talked to some of them. You know, there is talent to choose from. I think there's a lot more question marks, not because of who the players are, just because of the situation that we're all in and the number of times scouts have been able to evaluate these guys to see them live in action. Doesn't make them lesser players, but I think, you know, general managers and scouts by their nature, I think, tend to be more on the conservative side. So now you're playing into that with them not being able to see these guys and maybe not trusting their gut or not trusting their knowledge base. So maybe there was a little bit more willingness to move out a draft pick that is a larger question mark than usual for maybe a little bit more of a sure thing or a 2022 option when things in theory should be more back to quote unquote normal.
And that's my thing. If I'm a general manager, and this is strictly my opinion, if I'm a general manager, I'm looking to maybe collect those 2022 assets. I understand 21. We know, like you mentioned, we expect a lot of these players to be chosen in relatively short order. Maybe even a couple of these NTD players that we'll have on our show today. But it has to be a talking point that was, and I'm sure was at least considered by NHL clubs.
And then the other side of that is you're Jarmo Kekalainen sitting in Columbus collecting first round draft picks like their money. You know, he's got his now. He's got Tampa's from the David Savard trade. He's got Toronto's from another trade, you know, the Nick Foligno trade. So, you know, we've all seen Jarmo. He's a different cat. He's a different breed. He's got, you know, he's a guy who will zig when other people are zagging. So, you know, at the end of the day, 5 years from now, we might be looking at saying that Jarmo, smartest guy in the room. He went left when everybody was going right, and he hit the jackpot in the 2021 draft when everybody was sort of a little bit of afraid what these guys could be. Maybe we haven't seen them enough. Maybe we don't know them enough. Oh, he knew what he was doing, and he went huge, and he got, you know, 2-3 stars.
So there's a lot of special talent in Europe for sure. So we'll see if Jarmo, hit all the right buttons there. But, you know, speaking of tournaments and lack of tournaments this year, I mean, we lost a big one, right, Adam? The Canadian Hockey League announced recently that Memorial Cup will be canceled. So obviously that's a That's a big event for scouts, for general managers to get maybe a glimpse of what the future may hold for some of the, you know, the future draft picks. Obviously, in that tournament, the teams also have some veteran players, maybe undrafted players that play significant roles. But you're also looking at a lot of players that will be drafted. You know, looking in the at past tournaments, you know, Taylor Hall getting MVP of that tournament, a Jonathan Huberdeau MVP. So a lot of good players have come from that tournament in the Mem Cup.
Well, sure. And the last time they played, it was two years now. We've had no Memorial Cup, unfortunately. But 2 years ago in 2019, six guys off the four teams got drafted, four of them in the top three rounds, including, you know, Brett Leeson and Alexei Protas, who are two of the Washington Capitals top prospects. Would they have gone where they went had they not had the Memorial Cup to display their talent? So it's a big loss. But where, you know, one door closes, we have another door opening. And that's the World Under-18s, which are going to start here in 2 weeks. And we've got three great guests to talk about the World Under-18s, which are going to start April 26th in Texas from the United States National Team Program. Chaz Lucius and Sasha Pastajov and head coach Dan Muse. And Dan's going to join us first here. Dan, thank you for coming on NHL Draft Class today.
Thanks for having me on.
So the player most people want to know about from your team is Luke Hughes, the youngest of the three Hughes brothers. He's had a great season, but he's been out for a little bit more than a month now with an injury. Is there a chance we get to see Luke at the under-18s coming up here?
No, Luke won't, you know, just due to injury. And obviously, as you just stated here, he's been out for a little bit. We'll be unable to play there in the event.
So obviously Luke is going to be compared to his brothers, and for good reason, since his brothers are so dynamic and fun to watch. What assets does Luke possess that you feel make him a slam dunk pick for any NHL team in the NHL draft?
Well, I think there's a lot that you know, make him the player that he is. And he's a player that, you know, was just, you know, I really enjoyed working with. You know, I think the unfortunate part of things this year is, you know, he, did obviously get injured and was unable to play as of late, and unfortunately won't be able to join us here the rest of the year. But the fortunate part, I think, for him and for us is how many games he did play with us. This wasn't a player where it was just a small sample size. It was I think in comparison, you know, really to players across the world this year, you know, he had probably more than a full season in comparison to most, which is fortunate. And you know, you hate it when any player gets injured. But he's obviously a guy that played a really big role here on our team. But he did get a lot of hockey in. And so from that, you know, large sample size that I was able to work and see him play every day, and, you know, I had the pleasure of working with him on the ice and working together with him and his teammates, you know, the thing that really stands out is his skating. You know, he's so good on his edges. He's so good with that separation, that mobility that he has, his ability to separate from opponents, his ability to break pucks out, which, you know, is the driving force behind that is his skating and his edge works. And, you know, it makes him a very elusive player. He's tough to defend. He's a really tough player to defend. When he has the puck, he makes it really hard on the opponents. And because of that, a lot of times he'll draw multiple players to him. And so he, you know, when he has the puck, you know, I think naturally just with the way he plays and the way he skates, you know, he creates, I think, a disjointment on his opponents, and that creates a lot of time and space there for his teammates. You know, I think the first thing that for me, you know, it really stands out. You know, I think he's got really good ability in terms of his puck movement. You know, he can combine that ability to skate the puck if that's the right play, and, you know, head man the puck and advance zones with his skating, but he's also got the ability that he showed there just with his puck movement and his vision. And that's, you know, something that I think really helped our team a lot. You know, it's just that kind of 1-2 punch and his ability to transition our team into offense or be a starting point of transitioning the team to offense. And, you know, then the other part I'll add too with Luke that really I felt like, you know, really showed as his game developed over the course of the year was, you know, just the way he defended. And I think it starts with that skating again, but he's also got that long reach. So now you're combining You know, his skating, his mobility, his ability to close time and space on the opponent. You know, and really a lot of times with him, such a good skater, that'll start in the offensive zone, and he'll be able to, the opponent gets the puck, close in on him where there's really no room to work. And his game improved a ton in the defensive zone. He's a guy who, you know, prior to getting hurt, like, you know, while he was with us, you know, really he just tough to play against. Really good stick. You know, he can close in on guys with his skating, take away that time and space, kill plays, and then quickly transition that to offense. So there's a lot to like. I know it's a long-winded answer to a short question, but, you know, he was, you know, really enjoyed working with Luke this year, and I think he's got an extremely, extremely bright future ahead of him in this game.
I'm sure Luke's a really easy guy to talk about, but I want to ask you about a guy who I'm sure is also easy to talk about, Chaz Lucius. You watch him, he's obviously a very confident player, but going back to February when he finally got back into the lineup, he got past the knee injury. Were you concerned about maybe having to slowly work him back in, or was, could you tell from right away, and obviously he scored two goals in the first game back, but was he ready to go full speed the minute he stepped on the ice for you this season?
Oh, he had a couple weeks there where, you know, we had a plan in place. I would say it wasn't, it was a good plan. And part of that plan goes back to prior to him even returning back to the team. Like he worked really, really hard to get himself ready to go. Really hard, like really impressive, just the time and just, you know, the work ethic that he put into getting himself ready to get back. And then we have, we're fortunate because of some of the people and the resources that we have here, you know, led by Brian Galvin, who heads our sports science, a plan of, you know, just getting him back the right way. And so I feel like we followed that plan. But yeah, he's had a good start, and he's kept building off that really strong start, I think, every game. And you can see more and more parts of his game kind of coming along as we go, which is to be expected. But that starting point of his return was the really good one, which has allowed us to continue to build things in, for him to continue to build things into his game here as we're moving forward.
So Sasha Pastrasov led your team in scoring. He checks a lot of boxes, Coach, with his skating, the shot, the passing, scoring touch, hockey sense. I remember talking to you about him in February, and you told me this is a guy who wants to be on the ice in the big moments of games. That's something you can't really coach or instill into a player. But can you talk a little bit about that desire and passion in relishing the big moments in games?
Yeah, I still stand by that comment. I think he's continued to show that. And, you know, I think Chaz is another guy who, too, you could put in that fold. Like, those are guys, both those guys are guys that they, I think every player you ask would say, yeah, I want the puck on my tape in big moments. But some guys want it, some guys demand it. I feel like those two are two good examples of guys that demand it. You know, they really want it. And, you know, they built confidence, you know, I think in their teammates and their coaches that they can, you know, execute those big plays in those big moments. And, you know, I think he's just a guy who, you know, I think it's a part of who he is as a hockey player, you know, like he's, you know, I think him and Pasta and Chaz, both guys, you know, they've got great stick skills. They've got great shots. But they've also got the ability to make plays both under pressure and with time and space. And I think they're guys that really soak in and relish those key moments in a game, whether it's, you know, you need a goal on the power play to get the team going early, or you need a goal late because you're behind by one, whatever they might be. It seems like those are the guys that kind of in those key moments are able to come up with those big plays, and they have the, you know, confidence, combine that confidence and the skill to execute in those big moments.
And something I've always been intrigued by is guys like Red Savage and Tyler Boucher, two players who have had their fathers play long careers in the NHL. And from your standpoint, does that give them more of maybe an innate feel for the game or different situations? Maybe their hockey IQ is a little bit higher than the average kid just because that hockey experience is sort of hardwired into their DNA from their fathers. Do you see that in those two players in particular?
No, I think the hockey IQ piece for sure. For me to say that that's, you know, comes from that, you know, it'd probably be a question to ask them. They'd probably be able to tell you a little bit more. I mean, I think you definitely see it though. Like these are guys that have been around the game their whole life, like things that I'm sure their fathers, you know, talked to them growing up about the game and lessons that they learned and experiences that they had and reads on the ice that they felt worked well and all those things. I'm sure those do come into play. You know, but I think just also being around the game that much, you know, I think the more that you watch, even things that maybe when you're first watching it or first around it, or, you know, whether it's a game or a practice, you know, maybe you don't realize, you know, what it triggers in your mind. But it might be something you go back to early on. It's like, oh, I remember this. Maybe I can apply this to my game. I remember seeing that in a practice. Maybe I can apply that to my game. And so both those guys obviously have been around the game to a high degree their entire lives. And I'm sure that has factored in there with their development, you know, of their games, but also their hockey IQ.
Dan, you know, I've always wondered if there's anything different to coaching the NTDP U18s in the regular season in the United States Hockey League, and then coaching that same group in the World U18 Championship. What are your thoughts on that? And do you feel you may need to take a different approach when it comes to any part of your routine heading into the under-18s in Texas?
Oh, for sure. I think there's definitely some parts. Some parts will change. Some parts will stay the same. You know, it's a different, for me, I look at this as a different team. I mean, it's very unique in the sense that over the course of this year in particular, you know, for that 18 year, I'm essentially wearing, you know, what I consider two different hats. You know, you have your hat as the NTDP U18 coach, and then that turns to the, you know, U.S. national under 18 team coach, and a majority of the players are the same, but you know, they're not all going to be the same. It's not the exact same team that we started the year with. It's not the exact all guys that are in the same birth year. There's, you know, every year is different in the regards to how the roster is made up, with respect to, you know, players from outside of this, the NTDP program coming in. Every year that will change a little bit. I'm sure that changes the dynamic potentially even a little bit more, but it does change. I mean, you're talking about a season which the primary focus during that NTDP U18 year is the player development. Like, that's number one for me. It's going to be that we're developing these guys as individuals. We're developing them as hockey players, people, and then also we're developing them as a collective group coming together, but also learning those lessons that are important for what it means to be a member of a team. And those two things are working at the same time. And they're, I think, both extremely important. Now you turn the page. Now you're going into a short tournament. Now development's still important to me. I still want to be developing these guys through this experience they're going to have in this tournament, but it's a short tournament setting. And so it does change. It changes the approach. It'll change some of the day-to-day, but what won't change, I think, is kind of those key foundational elements that we've been talking about throughout the year, you know, which I won't go on great detail here, I think, but this group has had that. And that's been the things that we've been talking about, those foundational elements, those identity elements. We want to take those and really be peaking with those now at this time of year. So those parts of it won't change. But there'll be change a little bit in the infrastructure. There'll be change in terms of even jobs and roles. You know, you go from a development setting where there's some guy, you know, there's only two power plays, you know, during the year. So, you know, that part is going to be, you know, it stays the same throughout the year. We don't play necessarily in that 18 year, necessarily everybody on the power play, but it gets trimmed down even more now when you're going into this setting. And there will be situations where, you know, maybe guys played in a different role during the course of the USHL portion in the college games, where they're going to be asked to play in a different role here for this tournament now. And so those parts of it will be different.
Well, Dan, thank you for coming on with us today on NHL Draft Class, and good luck at the under-18s down in Texas.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on. Take care.
Mike, that was great stuff from Dan. I like what he said there at the end about his approach to the world under 18s being a little bit different.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you think about it, and here's the same coach that usually, you know, takes care of the team throughout the course of the regular season. How is it different, you know, entering the world under 18 championship? And there is a difference, because in the regular season, as Dan said, it's all about development, getting these kids ready for the next level in their careers. But then come that international tournament, which is scouted very heavily. And let's be honest, Adam, is probably will probably be the most heavily scouted tournament this season, this draft season. Yeah. Obviously, you know, it's all about getting the right people in the right positions and being able to play the right way to win a short tournament.
So we're going to have Sasha Pastajov from the national team on next. But I want to go back to something Dan said about Sasha, about him being, you know, a guy who wants to puck in those big moments. We've watched him on video. You know, that was pretty interesting and a pretty telling description of what kind of player he's going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've seen him. We've watched him on video, Adam. A kid that has that hockey sense, great scoring ability. And let's face it, you know, he led the NTDP in scoring this year, which was a credit to him and what he was able to bring to that team. And then he wins the MVP, as you mentioned, you know, in the All-American prospects game. So a very bright future for Sasha. And we expect him to maybe go top 15, top 20 in this draft for sure.
Well, let's bring on Sasha Pastajov from the U.S. National Team Program. Sasha, thank you for joining us today. Hope everything's going well.
They're going well. Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about your season. You've gotten to play against the NCAA competition, top USHL competition. You're leading the national team in scoring, and you were the player of the game at the BioSteel All-American game last week. Obviously, you had expectations for what you hoped the season would be like. How do you think your season's gone, and have you met your own personal expectations so far?
Yeah, I think season's been successful individually and as a team. I think every day I'm just trying to grow, get better as a hockey player and as a person. And I think the NTDP is a great, great place to do that. I'm not sure if I've met my expectations yet. I mean, we still have the U18 World Championships coming up. So that's definitely been a big goal of mine and of the team to do our best at that tournament. And yeah, I mean, the NCAA has been great competition. It's been a great year. We're just very thankful to be playing games.
So, Sasha, you're a player that likes the puck on your stick. You like to shoot. What does it mean to you to be a constant threat to shoot the puck? How does that benefit you and your teammates?
Yeah, it's a big focal point of mine, especially in the off season, to be working on the shot, trying to be more dangerous in the offensive zone. I mean, I guess it's pretty cool to be a threat like that, but it's not possible without having great teammates who are supporting me, supporting the puck, and just putting me in the right places to be successful.
So you're the youngest of three brothers, and there's a pretty decent size age gap between you and your middle brother, 4 years, right?
Yep.
So growing up as a very younger brother, how were the games with Mike and with Nick, and did they get nasty? Did everybody get along? Did they like strap you to the goalpost because they needed a goalie when they wanted to shoot? What was take me through childhood there? Take me through those brother games growing up.
Yeah, they were a blast. I mean, I credit a lot to Nick and Mike, where I got my definitely my toughness. I mean, there's never an easy day being the youngest of three, especially with that age gap, and definitely my competitiveness as well. I mean, every day you're just trying to prove yourself to them, trying to prove you can hang with them, play with them. So yeah, definitely a lot of goalie played, especially in mini sticks. I got really good at goalie. A lot of competition growing up. I mean, I always just aspired to be like them, do everything like them. So they're definitely the biggest role models of my life. But yeah, definitely never an easy day.
So Sasha, a question I've been dying to ask. I know your parents met while working at Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus. What do they tell you about it? And how do you think their experiences may have shaped you and your brothers as people?
It's definitely a unique story. I mean, meeting at the circus and stuff. The stories they have from there are just unbelievable. I guess they get a different story like almost every day. Something comes up. I think the coolest, my mom rode elephants, so that's pretty rare. And I love going through the pictures, stuff like that. It's pretty cool. My dad works more behind the scenes, which is a different look at it, but it's also kind of cool to hear his stories and the different stuff he did. But yeah, it definitely shaped our family in an interesting way. I mean, I think we got a lot of positive qualities on my parents. My dad's super, super determined, always working hard. And my mom, being a dancer, definitely gave me that perfectionist trait. She's always trying to do things, you know, the right way, perfectly. And I think I got a good combination of those of my parents' traits, and they shaped our family pretty well.
So if you were part of a circus and if you had an ability to be with your mom and dad during that period of their lives, what do you think would interest you at a circus?
Some like being an entertainer. I'd probably the guys that ride the motorcycles in the cages are pretty cool, pretty sweet. That definitely stuck out to me when after they were done with the circus, we'd go back every now and then. So those were pretty cool. I'd like to be in one of those cages with the tigers, but they're pretty scary as well. You never know when one of them are just going to snap.
All right. I think we could do an entire podcast just on the circus life. So, because it sounds amazing. And I have many, many questions. But I want to go back to your brothers for a sec. And Mike and Nick both went to University of Michigan. You're committed to play at Notre Dame next season. What was it about Notre Dame that pushed you to South Bend and made, you know, and what was the chirping like when, you know, they probably assumed you'd follow them right to Ann Arbor?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of people did, I think. And part of that is just, like I said earlier, I've always been following them, wanting to do what they do. And I've done that up until my college decision. I mean, I think it was just time to kind of forge my own way, do my own thing. And the coaches at Notre Dame, the academics at Notre Dame, the tradition there, just everything checked all my boxes, and I can't wait to go there. The chirps, like still come. I mean, obviously they're rivals with Michigan. So every now and then I'll get a couple, but when the decision was made, they were just nothing but supportive.
How long did your dad coach you, Sasha? And, you know, he did grow up and play in the USSR, Russia. What were some of the most important on ice lessons he offered you?
Yeah, he was my coach up until we moved to Michigan in sixth grade. So definitely just the lessons that he teaches me is just never be satisfied. There's always someone out there that's working just as hard, if not harder than you. So you just got to keep grinding every day and can't take a day off.
So I want to ask you about two of your teammates, Luke Hughes. A lot of guys are talking about him. Everybody knows his older brothers as well. Give me the scouting report on Luke Hughes as a teammate.
Lukey, he's unreal. He's a good guy in the locker room. I mean, on the ice, it speaks for itself. He the way he skates is just second to none. I mean, he just flies up the ice, and his IQ is off the charts as well. I mean, he's a pleasure to play with. He might not be looking at you, but he knows you're open, and he'll make that play.
And then the other guy I want to ask you about is Chaz Lucius. I know he missed the early part of the season with the knee injury, but now that he's come back, does he look like the guy that you knew prior to the injury? And then give me the scouting report on Chaz.
Yeah, I mean, Chaz is a big part of our team. And it was definitely we definitely missed his presence. But when he came back, I mean, it was super special. He came back, scored two goals in the first game. So, I mean, he definitely came back the same player, if not better. You know, he's another guy that's big in the locker room and someone the team missed. But yeah, he came back, and he's definitely just showing everyone what he can do with his goal scoring abilities.
So Sasha, how excited are you to be participating in the U18s? You know, with this particular group, and why do you feel maybe you have the team to get it done?
Yeah, we're thrilled to take part in this tournament. I mean, it's kind of the light at the end of the road at the NTDP. I mean, you grind for 2 years, you put everything in for 2 years, and it's all just to be able to show out at this tournament. So we're really excited. As a team, we've definitely been coming together more and more recently. I think just our bond, our brotherhood we've built will definitely give us a little bit of an edge over these teams that are just now coming together. And I think we've picked out, I guess, playing traits, or what's the word I'm looking for? We've picked out our process, I guess, and we call it the right way. And I think if we just stick to that, we'll be unstoppable.
Well, Sasha, this was great stuff. Some great stories, some, you know, great times reminiscing with you here too, the past with your mom and dad. So we appreciate you coming on NHL Draft Class, and best of luck at the U18s, buddy.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Mike, I don't know how your parents met. My parents met at a dance. They met at the circus. I mean, you cannot write a better story than this.
Well, meeting at a dance is nice, Adam. You know, my parents met at work, but it wasn't at the circus. This is such a unique and intriguing story that, you know, we had to get it on the podcast, right? We had to ask Sasha about this, and
we could have done a whole podcast on that.
We could have. Yeah. You know, the fact that, you know, what his mom was doing, having the opportunity to ride elephants at the circus. I mean, how it doesn't get much better than that. I mean, you know, I could see Sasha's maybe a lion tamer, a tiger tamer, or something along those lines. But then he's, you know, hits us with the motorcycle gig, you know, motorcycles in the globe, in the cages, spinning around. I mean, how great is that?
For me, not even remotely great. Not even, it sounds awful and horrible and something I would never, ever want to do. But look, hey, different strokes for different folks. But that was awesome. That is just, you know, that's one of the things we really like. Like, you know, doing the podcast, covering the draft for as long as we have, it becomes, you know, we had an old boss of ours, Phil Coffey, used to say, it can't just be, tell me your story, Slugger. You know, it just can't be on the ice. It can't just be the game. There's so much more to these kids as people. And like, this is just one of those things. I love covering this stuff because you find out these little gems about a guy that his parents met at working for Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus. It's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, the circus started in, you know, very early, so many years back at Nassau Coliseum, and they had their last show at Nassau Coliseum, you know, in 2017. Sasha did tell us off the air that, you know, he didn't get an opportunity to attend that show. But I mean, how great is that? Just a great story, Adam.
It's awesome. And now, you know, we have another guest, Chaz Lucius from the U.S. national team coming on. I'm not sure how his parents met. I can't imagine it was better than at the circus. But Chaz has had a great season coming back from a little bit of an injury. He's going to hopefully tell us some more details about that. And let's bring him in. Chaz Lucius, thank you for joining us today on NHL Draft Class.
Great. Thank you for having me.
So I want to start with, you know, you missed the early part of the season with a knee injury, but now that you're healed up, can you give us a little insight into what happened, how the injury occurred, and what your recovery was like?
Yeah, so the injury happened, we think, a while back, just kind of a fluke thing. I took a puck to the knee, and in turn, it kind of closed on my growth plate 2 years later, which ended up being this summer. So I ended up having a bone lesion in my knee. Which is actually a pretty simple fix. So they did the surgery all arthroscopically. So just minor little incisions. I didn't even need stitches, but the time it takes to heal is quite a while just for it being bone, and bone has to adhere to the cartilage. So that took a while, but now that I'm back and healthy, I feel better than ever and excited to be back.
Yeah, that's great to hear, Chaz. So what was part of your normal routine when you were out of the lineup with regard to training and skating? You know, did you do a lot of video work? Were you, you know, obviously your teammates, the biggest cheerleader, what was kind of your routine?
So I did all my, so after my surgery, I did all my therapy and training at the training house. So basically, I mean, it was a pretty extensive recovery process for me. Just being that, you know, having it being bone, you can't walk on it. So I couldn't walk on my leg for 3 months. So the recovery process was really extensive, and a lot of people don't know that, but the walking part of it was tough just to get that back. And I ended up going in a hyperbaric oxygen chamber for 2 hours a day, Monday through Friday, and PT every single day, with trying to work out. And it wasn't until December that I was able to skate and walk again. And then from that point on, I hit the ice ablazing and felt great. And then got back to where I am now.
I'm flabbergasted that you went from not being able to walk in December to February 19th, your first game. You come out and you score two goals and you help the NTTP win. Were you concerned at all that you'd be the same player when you got back? And I guess you're beyond 100% injury free right now, or at least how you felt before the injury.
So even last year I was dealing with this knee pain, and it was kind of a lingering issue. So I didn't really know what was wrong. And when they finally told me what was, it all kind of made sense. And I was actually almost, I mean, you never want to miss time, but I was almost relieved that we found out what it was and that I could get it fixed and that it was an easy fix and an easy solution to the problem. But to get to your point of the game, I was never nervous. And I always knew once I got back, I'd be better and I'd feel more confident with a healthy knee.
Chaz, what do you feel is your greatest asset on the ice and what might be your, you know, most underappreciated asset?
Yeah, my greatest asset is going to be my shot. I feel like I can score from just about anywhere on the ice, whether it be top of the circles or getting a gritty goal low and in tight. And then I feel like an underappreciated aspects of my game is my passing and then my defensive zone.
So I want to ask you about a couple of your teammates that are, you know, like you, A-rated players, likely first-round picks in the 21 draft here. Let's start with Luke Hughes, the defenseman. Everybody knows about him because of his older brothers and his skill level. But how is Luke as a teammate and a defenseman?
Yeah, he's a great teammate. He's a really good defenseman. What stands out to me is just his skating and his presence on the ice. He's not afraid to make a mistake, which I think is a really good quality for him. He's not afraid to be in the limelight either. But just with that being said, he's not afraid to skate the puck either. And he's a good 200-foot player. And I feel like he can really help out on the offensive side too, just as much as defense.
And then I want to ask you about Sasha Pastajob. He leads your team in scoring. What is it about Sasha that makes him so special?
I'd probably say just his decision-making with the puck. He knows what to do with it, and he knows where to place it on the ice. And then I'd say just his presence on the ice, too, and his strong forechecking ability makes him a big presence in the offensive zone.
So headed to the University of Minnesota, they finished 7th in the NCAA poll, 24-7 this season. What led you to that decision?
Yeah, just growing up in Minnesota, I always felt like if I ever got the opportunity to play there, that I'd take it in a heartbeat, and that's what happened. And just growing up, like, watching the games, it always was at a place in my heart, and I always wanted to go there. So that's kind of why.
Got to ask you, Chad. I mean, what are you most looking forward to at the World U18 Championship beginning April 26th in Texas?
Yeah, just for that event to be on first and foremost, so we can try to win gold is obviously really special, and then just to represent your country too. I mean, I've gotten the opportunity 3 other times. So, I mean, just to represent on the international stage is really special. And I'm looking forward to being with the team, being with the group of guys. I mean, it's our last run together. So I'm hoping to make it pretty special.
Well, good luck, Chaz, and good luck to your team at the under-18s in Texas. And thank you for coming on NHL Draft Class today.
Thank you.
So we talked a lot about the World Under-18s. They're going to be starting April 26th down in Texas. Mike, you mentioned it earlier. It is going to be the most heavily scouted draft prospect tournament of the year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, you know, the U.S. is going there with, you know, guns a-blazing, right? They've won 10 gold medals in tournament history, the most of any country at the event. And, you know, I expect the U.S. to have a real good team here based on what we've heard and what Dan was able to tell us. You know, Canada has a good club going to this tournament, of course, Adam. You know, Brant Clark, a right-handed D that we know a lot about, you know, unfortunately he hasn't been able to play in the O, but he did play in Slovakia and he performed well there, 15 points in 26 games. Dylan Gunther from the Edmonton Oil Kings, you know, playing in the Dub right now in the WHL with, you know, leads the Western Hockey League with 9 goals, 18 points. So he's playing real well. There are quite a few players on this Canada team that could go in the first round. Carson Lambos, of course, a player from Winnipeg, 6'1", 197-pound left-handed D, it won't be attending, you know, have an opportunity to play because of the injury, but is another player that could go high in the first round here. Mason McTavish from Peterborough, Carson Kuhlmans from Brooks, the right-handed D, who will be attending the University of Wisconsin next year, is another one to look out for. So quite a few players here, Adam, that on Canada that are going to have an impact for that club. And of course, you just can't forget about the other countries that have some big name players here. You know, Russia, you know, obviously has some players. Nikita Chabrikov, the 5'10", 170-pound right wing. He's an A-rated skater on Central Scouting's players to watch list. He's going to probably make this team and have an impact. And of course, you can't forget about Sweden and Finland. They have their share of players as well.
I think with Canada, they're more intriguing this year than years past because there is no Memorial Cup. There is no real CHL playoffs. So some of these kids you mentioned, Brant Clark, Dylan Gunther, those guys might not be in this tournament because they have responsibilities with their club team in the WHL playoffs, the Ontario League playoffs. the Memorial Cup. So this is going to be a different feel, different look to this Canada team. They're going to come in fully stacked, where in years past they probably wouldn't.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You know, and we would expect them to be right at the top of the mix as far as, you know, having the opportunity to earn a medal here. And you're right. It's a team that's going to be loaded. They look as though they're ready, you know, raring to go for this tournament, as all these countries are. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, based on players having the opportunity to play overseas, those players that have had opportunities to play in state, and of course the WHL and the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League have had their chance to play as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all meshes together, right, Adam? You know, sometimes you consider these all-star type tournaments with players, but in this case, the coaches want to get the players to fit in certain roles, and it's going to be interesting to see where they fit when maybe you haven't had those many viewings of these particular players.
Yeah, it's going to be a nice little chemistry project for the coaches there. But speaking of international tournaments, one other little bit of news: Nate Lehman is going to come back and coach the U.S. the World Juniors again after his gold medal performance in January with the U.S. I think couldn't be a better choice.
No, you know, obviously he had great success at the tournament last year. And the U.S. is seeking, you know, its sixth medal in 7 years. So I think Nate Lehman did an extraordinary job last year. Obviously the team got out of the gate a little slow, but then as the tournament progressed, they really, really did what they needed to do. Trevor Zegras, of course, leading the way, and Spencer Knight in goal for the U.S. national junior team. So it's going to be interesting to see what they're able to do, you know, right back in Western Canada next year as well.
It'll be fun. And as we record this on Wednesday, Mike's, your draft notebook is going to come out on Friday. Let's talk a little bit about that. Who are you profiling? Who should people look forward to being able to read about?
Well, the main profile part of it is on Cole Sillinger, who will be participating with Canada at the U18s. So we expect him to be there. So Cole Sillinger, he plays for Sioux Falls in the United States Hockey League. He's having a great deal of success there. His usual team is Medicine Hat and the Dub, and he'll be, you know, returning to Medicine Hat next year, but because of the unpredictability of the Western Hockey League this year, he decided to play in the United States Hockey League and has had great success there. Talk a little about that and some of the other players that had NHL playing dads, Adam. You know, I'll discuss a little bit about Tyler Boucher. Of course, Brian Boucher, his dad, played goalie for 13 NHL seasons. Josh Doan, the son of former NHL forward Shane Doan. Scott LaChance, you know, Shane LaChance, whose dad, Scott LaChance, played in the league. And of course, he's also Shane is also the grandson of U.S. Hockey Hall of Famer and former BU coach Jack Parker. And then Ryan St. Louis, of course, the son of the great Martin St. Louis. So it's kind of a good packed notebook there with players. And there's quite a few more, Adam, but I just chose these players figuring, you know, these are the guys that have a good shot first, second round as well.
Well, that's good stuff. So that's something for fans to look forward to on Friday. But we're going to close up shop here on this episode of NHL Draft Class. Mike, another good one. It was fun to talk World Under 18s with the national team guys.
It was a lot of fun, and you know, wish them nothing but success and what they're able to do, and hopefully all the rest of the teams, countries participating in the event have great success as well.
Thank you for listening to NHL Draft Class, but right now NHL Draft Class is dismissed.